is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, August 1st, right after the trade deadline. And today will be better than yesterday. I'm Buster Olney, working from a studio here, makeshift studio in Bristol, Connecticut. We're taping this. Rachel Ulrich, who is the baseball editor for ESPN.com. I know I'm going to mess up your title. You probably have some special title.
Yeah, that would
like
work.
Senior something, executive vice president of baseball.
That part is much less interesting than the baseball editor part. That's the important one, yeah.
And you all know Tim Kirkchin. Tim, how you doing?
I'm great. We're done with another trade deadline, so that means Buster and Jeff Passan and a few others out there get to finally relax.
We're all happier at 6:48 than we were at 5:48.
You guys are the big winners at the trade deadline.
Oh, man, there's just such a sense of relief. All right, so Rachel, from you, you were basically downstairs in the ESPN.com version of the War Room.
Exactly.
Tell me what your impressions of this year's trade deadline, and you can take it back to when guys first started to be flipped, not necessarily just today.
Yeah, we really weren't sure what to expect, and I had in my head, you know, vivid memories of last year when it was just all about Soto all the time, and we were all just waiting for this big Padres deal, and wasn't really sure a couple of days ago what those big deals were going to be. So we were super excited that the Mets went all in, made some moves that we could talk about, everybody was excited about, and then I also really loved, I feel like this year, way more than last, we got a flurry right at 6 o'clock, which is always really fun when you're just like constantly seeing them come in, Worth, fam, where it's going. He's leaving the lock, you know, leaving the clubhouse in street clothes. Loved that. So that part was really fun.
And it's better now that it ends at 6 o'clock, because 25 years ago, Randy Johnson got traded at 12:02 in the morning, and our show ended at midnight, and we said, all right, Randy Johnson is still a member of the Mariners, and instead he's a member of the Houston Astros, and that completely blew up everything, and now it's 1 o'clock in the morning and we're scrambling. So it's much better we're done at six.
Yeah, we've learned a lot about that through the years. Like, just hold on, the Manny Ramirez deal, the Nomar deal, I think were deals that happened after the deadline. I remember that trade because I was covering the Yankees at the time for the New York Times and talking with Brian Cashman after that deadline, because the big question was whether the Yankees were going to go all in to trade for him and try to intercede. So he winds up at that time going to the Astros, who were in the National League, as you remember. And so Brian was so happy he went to the other league, because otherwise George Steinbrenner would have yelled at him every day. And he became the biggest Astro, the person who rooted against the Astros more than anybody in the world, because he didn't want Randy Johnson to be beating the Yankees in the World Series. All right, so let's do this rapid fire. There's so many great topics to talk about. Rachel, the Orioles.
Yes.
A team that you love and care about. They come down to the deadline, and they add a starting pitcher in Jack Flaherty. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think it's a great ad for them, and I was excited to see what they gave up for. It felt like a really fair trade, but it was a move that they needed to make. I think after last year, I think it was disappointing for a lot of folks in Baltimore, but an understandable move to sell rather than add. But this year they needed to go for it a little bit. And I think Flaherty's a great guy to go in. You know, his peripheral's a lot better of late. So if we can pick him as a guy that's going to improve in the second half, and it's still hard for me to believe where they are in the standings, but where they are is a place that they should be making a move like this. So we'll see if it matters in October.
And you saw Kyle Gibson after the game on Monday basically say, hey, if we don't make a move, we'll be okay. And I just shaking my head when I read that. I'm like, no, because we had just seen the Orioles over the weekend. It does feel like their pitching is on fumes. They needed to add somebody. You get Jack Flaherty, last five starts, 3.03 ERA. His fastball is better. His command is better. It seemed like for the Orioles, something they had to do, whether it was Flaherty or somebody else.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, he stabilizes the rotation, which is very young. And also, because he's so big and strong and has got some of his durability back, he can give them some innings and take a little pressure off of that bullpen, which has worked extremely hard lately.
Clear winners of this deadline, I think we'd all agree, Astros. Tim, what do you think?
No doubt. They got the best pitcher available, Justin Verlander, whose last seven starts, 6 earned runs in 42 innings. He looks a lot like the guy who won the Cy Young last year for the Astros, and he is so wildly competitive. Now he's got something to shoot for. First team to repeat as world champions since the Yankees in the late 90s, early 2000s. That's how Justin Verlander's mind works. You put him in the middle of that that rotation. And suddenly the Astros and the Orioles, to me, are the best teams in the American League. And I think by October 1st, the Astros will be the leader, the team to beat in the American League. Their pitching is really good, and their lineup is finally getting healthy.
And they have the arrogance, competitive arrogance of a championship team. They remind me, just a couple weeks ago, we were around them and talking with Alex Bregman, talking to Jose Altuve. There is an assumption among that group, yeah, we're going to figure that out. And it did remind me of those Yankee teams when I covered, who at times you'd be watching them, you'd be like, they're on fumes, and yet they always assume they would find a way to win in a big game because they have so much experience. And now you add Justin Verlander. I love the fact that Jim Crane, it feels like, is prepared, like the Dodgers, to try to make big moves. What'd you think?
Yeah, same. I mean, and I think what Tim said is true too. They're also about to get a bunch of guys back off the IL that is going to make them even better. Not discounting the moves that they made with Graveman and Verlander coming back to the team via trades. Everything else they're doing is just going to keep improving. I mean, they're always scary, even in second, even when they were in third place in the AL West, they're a scary team, and it's hard to bet against them ending up back on top again.
All right, a team on the other end of the spectrum, the New York Mets. And Max Scherzer did an interview with Ken Rosenthal in which he revealed to him that he had a conversation with Billy Epler, general manager of the Mets. In a paraphrasing here, basically he said that Billy was saying, yeah, we're not going to go after upper echelon free agents this winter. We may not necessarily be his perception was Billy was basically telling him we're not going to necessarily try to compete at the same level next year. Those were interesting quotes. I know that Billy Epler is going to be asked about him. You know he's going to push back and say we are rebuilding. But I don't think you can get around the fact if you're the Mets, it's a giant step back, Rachel.
Yeah, and Buster, I'll throw it back to you because I'm curious what this means for something you and I have talked a lot about in the last couple of weeks, was just the Mets on Ohtani this winter. But it does feel like it is a step back. It's just such a disappointment. I mean, when we talk about Verlander going to a team where he thought he could win another championship, he thought that was the Mets a couple of months ago. And it's hard to believe that this is where they are now. But I do still have a lot of questions about what this means for them going forward. I think they got a great return. The guys that they're coming back as somebody that our prospect analyst, Kylie McDaniel, is really excited about. But there's no getting around the fact that it's just a huge, huge disappointment.
Yeah, I'm not sure where their rotation is for next year. They just lost their two best pitchers.
To be announced is right. Where it is.
Exactly. So they have Kodai Senga and David Peterson. Then they got to really figure out the other three. The farm system got a whole lot better. You're right. But there's not immediate help out of that farm system. And it's not a great free agent year other than Shohei Ohtani. So how they're going to rebuild this team and make it really good again in 1 year, I'm having a little trouble with that. And I have a little trouble with a Mets team saying we're going to take a pass on 2024 when the owner just spent $340 million in payroll. I'm not sure that's going to fly very well either.
So a lot of times when we have conversations with managers, you'll hear that the rationale behind a decision, you'll give you the explanation. And then when you hear it, you're like, okay, that makes sense. I actually think that what the Mets did last winter was totally reasonable. Mm-hmm. You win 101 games, you add Justin Verlander, you think, you know what, we're going to be pretty good. And they weren't. And that's just kind of the way that it played out. And the decision internally last week that they reached was, you know what, here are two choices. We can either chalk up 2023 to being an outlier, we were unlucky, and then just run these guys back 1 year older, Verlander at 41 and Scherzer going at age 40, or we can look to make a significant change here. And I think it was totally reasonable that they did that. Yeah. Is that, what do you think?
I think so. And again, I do think if you think about what the sort of going up versus going down of the players they got rid of and the players that they added, like it's real. Those were aging pitchers, no matter how great they were. I mean, and let's be honest, they're two future Hall of Famers, but they were arrow down players. And I think everybody that they got back are arrow up. They're guys that people are getting more and more excited about the more they watch them in the lower leagues.
And while it might be reasonable, Tim, the fact is it feels like they're 100 miles from where the Atlanta Braves and the Philadelphia Phillies are. Maybe even, as Eduardo pointed out on the show today, even maybe where the Marlins are.
Yeah, I think that was part of all this, is that the Mets looked at the Braves and said, they are demonstrably better than we are, and they're going to be that much better than us next year. So how do we get closer to them for 2025? We go get Ronald Acuna Jr.'s little brother.
Literally, the mini version.
We go add some other pieces eventually and get better for 2025, because we're not going to approach them next year, certainly with the way Atlanta is built.
So think about this number. Since June 1st of last year, when the Braves were 10.5 games behind the Mets in the standings, since that date, the Mets are 27 or 28 games behind the Braves in the regular season standings. Like, there is a million miles between these two teams. All right, let's talk about other moves. What'd you think of the Phillies, Michael Lorenzen?
I love that. Made the All-Star team. Amazing athlete. They needed another starting pitcher. I thought they might go for an outfielder, you know, maybe Adam Duvall, somebody like that. But if you can add an All-Star pitcher who's really versatile and can play left field and hit if you need him to, even though you don't because he's a pitcher, I really like what they did. Classic Dave Dombrowski, doesn't say a word, lying in the weeds, and comes out and says, all right, we got a guy to bolster the rotation. Really good move by the Phillies. I think they'll be a playoff team, and Michael Lorenzen will help them.
And I think right now they're the biggest threat to the Braves in the National League. What do you
think? Yeah, it's funny, Tim. I was just thinking, when our writer Brad Doolittle filed his grade on this story, he said, this is a classic Dave Dombrowski move. This is the kind of thing he does every single deadline. They have a good rotation. They had a good rotation without Lorenzen. They have a much better one now, and they know that that's the kind of thing that matters. They can get there.
All right. We go through a trade deadline, and the Yankees and the Red Sox basically did nothing, okay? The Red Sox trading Kike Hernandez away. The Yankees adding Middleton, a reliever, to which the part of the team that's the best, which mm-hmm. is the bullpen. Rachel, what'd you think?
Well, I laughed because one of our other editors is a Yankee fan, and poor guy was in there and as you said, in the war room with us, and we were all just waiting. And I said, is it like more offensive to just trade for Middleton? That might be worse than just doing nothing. Because to your point, Buster, it fills no needs. It's not something that they should have been looking for. I know it sounds like the Yankees were going hard for Bellinger. Bellinger would have been great on that team. When he's unavailable, that changes things. But Middleton this year on this team?
Sam?
They're hitting .230 as a team. They've scored 151 fewer runs than the Rangers, and they just struck out 30 times in a two-game period, a first in the history of the Yankees. They so desperately needed to add a middle-of-the-order bat. And you're right, Rachel, Bellinger was the perfect guy, but he was off the market a week ago. There wasn't much help there. So, Buster, this is almost a sign to the fans saying, look, we're probably not good enough to make the playoffs anyway, but we're going to bolster a very good bullpen.
Yeah, this felt like a parental moment from the Yankees front office. And you make comparison. One time my daughter, Sydney, called me. She had overslept, and she didn't make the airport for a flight leaving for Japan. And she was in Cleveland, and she said, I missed my flight. And I said, well, good luck. And it feels like, to some degree, the Yankees front office is saying to the players, hey, you know what? You guys are making a lot of money. You got a lot on the back of your baseball card, and you're going to have to figure it out.
Well, they got a lot of work to do and a lot of teams to pass. And, you know, I rarely say this. I don't think they're making the playoffs. I think too many teams are in front of them, and I just don't see them scoring enough runs.
We talked about this with your story last week, Buster, though. It's like, it's so hard because do you trust the teams ahead of them? It's so crowded for that third wild card spot
right
now.
They're not great teams.
But they're not great teams. So I don't know that I bet against the Yankees in favor of, you know, the Red Sox or the Angels. It really feels like they do have a chance. They can still make this, and to have not done something that really feels like it helps that case is hard.
Tim, another team in the American League East, I thought had a sneaky good trade deadline, the Toronto Blue Jays, with what they did, and especially building a safety net behind Bo Bichette if that injury is more serious than what the Blue Jays want to tell
us. Right. Paul DeYoung's going to help. He can hit the ball out of the ballpark, and if Bichette has any issues with that knee, they have a backup shortstop. They also got Jordan Hicks from the Cardinals, and again, he can be erratic, as we all know, but he's averaging 12.7 strikeouts per nine innings. He throws 102 miles an hour, and Jordan Romano, their closer, has a back issue. He's on the injured list. They need somebody else at the back. I really like where the Blue Jays are, but two things have to happen. Alek Manoah has to come back to somewhere.
You think so?
Somewhere close to his form of last year.
I don't think he has to. And I think the rotation's deep enough with Ryu coming back.
Well, we have to see how Ryu pitches tonight. Yeah. I mean, that's the key. Is he going to be okay after all this time off? I think those two guys are critical if the Blue Jays are going to do something in October. I think they're making it to October no matter what. But if they're going to, they need to do more than get knocked out in the first round like last year. And I think they need Manoah and Ryu to pitch really well.
Rachel, on Friday, Saturday morning, I was hearing from other teams that AJ Preller, the general manager of the Padres, was calling around and assessing possible value on Josh Hader and Blake Snell and Juan Soto in case he wound up having to sell. They also sensed he did not want to sell at all. And as we like to say, this is the one time a year when small sample size can make a difference. And they go out and they sweep the Texas Rangers, and all of a sudden they're buyers. And they get G-Man Choi and Rich Hill, and they're going for it again. What'd you think?
Well, AJ Preller is a sports editor's dream because he just does, like, wild stuff all the time. He's just, like, he is always willing to just
very
throw
good
it all.
Using the word stuff there. I don't know, I would have.
Hey, yeah. Guys, I was ready for the microphone because it was not the first word that came to mind. But it is. I mentioned last year and how fun that was for us to cover as a team, and that was a lot in part due to him just saying, like, let's try this. And I kind of love that he did it again. I mean, they are good enough. They should be a playoff team. It's sort of like the Yankees where it's just not working. But to your point about, like, it's not about the players on the roster. It's not about their stats. These players should be able to figure this out. And I hope they do. Baseball is fun when the Padres are good. They have so many really fun, exciting stars. And if this is enough to get them there, you know, the Rangers sweep was great, and then they lost again yesterday before they made some moves. Yeah. We'll see.
AJ Preller never sleeps. And he wouldn't Prellers. Have slept at all if he had to sell in the middle of a pennant race. Now, it's still a long shot that they make the playoffs. And maybe the logical thing to do would have been to sell Josh Hader and Blake Snell, both of whom are free agents at the end of the year. But when you start the season with those kind of expectations, with that kind of payroll, and as the sexiest team in baseball, you cannot give up at the beginning of August when you still have this kind of talent on the team. And if they do somehow make it to the playoffs, I think they become the one team that could, or the team most suited to beat the Braves in the playoffs, if they make it, because that implies they're going to get really hot from here. Their lineup is good, their rotation is good, and they have an elite closer. Yep.
So a team that I think had a sneaky good deadline, like the Blue Jays, were the Cleveland Guardians, and a team that had a sneaky bad deadline, the Minnesota Twins. Tell me what you make of those two teams.
Well, the defense for the Guardians got a whole lot better because Josh Bell was not a very good first baseman and Ahmed Rosario was not a very good shortstop. Sorry. And they were.
Tim's a lot nicer than I am. I know. Ahmed Rosario was really bad.
Right.
He was statistically the worst shortstop in baseball.
Right. They were built on pitching and defense and putting it in play last year when they made the playoffs, and they became a different team this year. So they're trying to fix that on the go. I'm still not sure Aaron Civale, he could have helped the Guardians, but they had to do something to get their first baseman of the future. So I kind of like what they did after all, because Tito Francona cannot deal with a team that doesn't play good defense.
And the Twins, I was surprised we didn't see more from them at the deadline.
Yeah, and I was surprised that Sonny Gray, granted he's a free agent at the end of the season, they were considering trading him, because their one shot to win the division and do something in October is to outpitch everyone, and Sonny Gray has been their best pitcher this year.
All right, one of the big trades that didn't happen, Eduardo Rodriguez, the Dodgers and Tigers, according to Jeff Passan, had a deal arranged, and Eduardo Rodriguez scotched the deal because the Dodgers are one of the teams on his 10 no trade list. Rachel, what do you think of the Dodgers in terms of what they are aiming for and what they wound up getting? Because certainly, you know, they got Ahmed Rosario, they got Kike Hernandez, they made that deal with the White Sox last week, getting Joe Kelly, getting Lance Lynn. They got better, but I don't feel like they separated themselves based on the fact they didn't get that other starting pitcher.
Yeah, I was super curious what was going to happen in those last couple of minutes after the Erod deal fell apart, if they were going to be one of the teams in on Flaherty, or, I mean, again, the one that kept coming up was Dylan Cease. And I'm sure the price tag at that point was really, really high, and it was probably just too high for the Dodgers. But I think they got better, and I think they've also just started to separate themselves in the NL West regardless, you know. Again, with the Padres struggling and the Diamondbacks falling back a little bit, they might have felt like they didn't need quite as much as they felt like they needed a month ago. But what they got and what they were going for are definitely pretty far apart.
How could Eduardo Rodriguez want to stay with the Tigers when he's got a chance to go to the Dodgers? I'm a little confused by that. The Dodgers have been pretty consistent with one thing this year. It seems they keep holding back, just so they have everything in place to make a run at Shohei Ohtani in the offseason. So they didn't do a huge amount at the deadline, in part because they have their eyes on one certain player.
Yeah, so I hear that Eduardo Rodriguez walked away from this process believing that that it was the Tigers' fault for not making this happen. Now, I this is what's going to follow is pure speculation. Perhaps the perhaps in order to waive his no-trade clause, he wanted some sort of compensation. We've seen that before. And I'm sure the Dodgers, when that came up, the Dodgers probably told the Tigers, look, that's not our responsibility. That's on you guys. And maybe the Tigers' feeling was, it's like you, Tim, like, wait, you're going to pass up a chance to go to that team and rather than stay here? Yeah. So we'll see. What some other teams surprisingly didn't add. The Cincinnati Reds, I thought they would do more for sure. San Francisco Giants really didn't do a lot. We've talked a little bit about the Red Sox. I know they feel like internally that a lot of their additions going forward are going to be guys coming off the injured list. But I got to believe all those executives in those cities are going to wake up and be hearing not great reviews. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm surprised the Reds didn't do anything. Now, they're a year ahead of schedule, if not two. They lost 100 games last year. They weren't supposed to be here. But they've got everyone in Cincinnati really jazzed about this team. They have a chance to make the playoffs. They need a starting pitcher. I'm really surprised they didn't go harder for Rodriguez or Jack Flaherty or Michael Lorenzen or somebody else. Again, they have such a great farm system. They have a plan in place. They're still building. But Earl Weaver used to tell me all the time, when you got a chance to win this year, you try to win this year, and you figure out next year. And several teams didn't follow that philosophy for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the other hand I'll say is that that's exactly where the Orioles were last year when they sold. And so right. The fact that the Reds didn't do that, like, you give them some credit for. But I do think this comes back again to just how crowded these races are for these last spots. It feels like so many of the very top playoff contenders are already set, which means there's, I think, both leagues, there's five or six teams that feel like, maybe. And if they just really felt like it's too crowded this year, we've got a better shot next year, like, maybe that's the mindset.
All right, Rachel, you get to see Tim's body language when I ask this question. Based on what we saw deadline, I need you to repick your World Series selections, okay? Knowing what you know now, you get to do your favorite thing and you get to make a prediction, Tim. Who's winning the World Series and who are they beating?
I can't even remember who I picked at the beginning of the year.
I do remember who I picked, and I'm not going to say it.
All right. I'm going to say that the Braves are going to play the Astros in the World Series because the Verlander move advances the Astros to a special place, and I just love where the Braves are right now, the way they hit the ball out of the ballpark like no one else, score runs like no one else. So I'm going to say, great body language, the Braves will beat the Astros in the World Series, and I'm sure I'll change my mind tomorrow.
Yeah, so you're banking on Kyle Wright coming back.
I'm banking on Max Fried and Kyle Wright coming back and added people in the bullpen, and they can pound you like no one else.
Rachel?
Oh, gosh. I hate making predictions. I usually get out of this because I'm the editor.
The for you is worse than it was for
Tim. I know.
And you had a moment to prepare.
Editors don't have to make predictions. I always get out of this. I can't disagree with Tim. I think it's hard to bet against the Braves making it again. They're so fun to watch and they're so good. I'll take a wild card on the other AL West contender, and I'll go Rangers. Rangers will face them. Why not?
Very nice. All right, guys. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Buster.
A lot of fun.
Thank you, Buster. Thank you, Taylor, Sarah. Thanks for putting everything together up here.
Happy deadline day.
Yeah, 100%. And thank you for not asking me for my World Series.
I know. He just went straight to that. Oh, my God.
Buster picked the Padres in the preseason.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
For the record, I'm going to give you a list of trades that happened in the last couple of days. We hit on the major ones when we were talking with Rachel and with Tim. The San Diego Padres are acquiring right-handed reliever Scott Barlow from the Kansas City Royals. Barlow, of course, has closing experience. So for the Padres, having a guy help to in their setup group, which has been somewhat of an issue for a lot of this season. The Boston Red Sox are acquiring infielder Luis Urias from the Milwaukee Brewers. That's a really interesting deal because he's a good infielder. He's had some good moments. The Red Sox already will be getting back Trevor Story for their infield here coming up. The Miami Marlins acquired first baseman Josh Bell from the Cleveland Guardians for infielder Gene Segura, infield prospect Khalil Watson. The Yankees, that one move that they made, acquired right-handed reliever Kenyon Middleton from the Chicago White Sox. With that deal, the Yankees became the 30th of 30 teams to make a deal. It's an unusual trade deadline for Brian Cashman, the Yankees general manager. The Orioles, of course, got Jack Flaherty from the St. Louis Cardinals. The Diamondbacks made some moves. They acquired outfielder Tommy Pham from the Mets. The Rangers acquired catcher Austin Hedges from the Pirates. He's excellent defensively. You can bet that's someone that Max Scherzer is going to want to throw to. The White Sox actually were buying after selling off so many pitchers. Luis Patino added from the Tampa Bay Rays for cash considerations. Tampa Bay needing some 40-man roster space after making these deals. The Brewers acquired left-handed reliever Andrew Chafin in a deal with the Diamondbacks. The Phillies, as we talked about, added starting pitcher Michael Lorenzen from the Tigers. The Padres, we made reference to this deal, Rich Hill, G-Man Choi, in a deal with the Pirates. Paul DeJong was added by the Blue Jays from the St. Louis Cardinals. The Rockies and the Braves worked out a deal where the Braves got Brad Hand, veteran left-hander. On Monday, the Cincinnati Reds acquired left-hander reliever Sam Moll from the Oakland Athletics for right-hander Joe Boyle. The one deal, and we're going to be talking a little bit about this with Sarah Lyons coming up when we discuss the San Francisco Giants not doing much. They did finalize a trade to acquire outfielder A.J. Pollock and utility man Mark Mathias from the Seattle Mariners. The Cubs on Monday acquired third baseman Jamer Candelario from the Washington Nationals. Mark Canha goes from the Mets to the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brewers sent back right-hander Justin Jarvis, a pitcher who's in Double A right now. The Diamondbacks added closer Paul Sewald from the Seattle Mariners. In the end, who knows, maybe the Diamondbacks deals will have the biggest impact. We reference the fact that the Angels landed outfielder Randall Grichuk, first baseman C.J. Cron from the Colorado Rockies. And a couple days ago, the Braves acquired infielder Nicky Lopez from the Kansas City Royals on Sunday in exchange for left-hander Taylor Hearn, who the Braves just acquired in the last week. So as my son pointed out, Taylor Hearn now becomes a great grid name in that going forward because he spent just a week with Atlanta.
0-0-9-6. This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter-producer from MLB.com. Sarah, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Buster. We've talked about trade deadline. We've also talked about my tendency not to be the morning bird or whatever it is, getting up early. And I remember back when I was at ESPN researching those trade deadline shows, like the one you just did. That was the one day a year I'd be on campus at like 8 a.m. So today didn't have to be on campus anywhere, but certainly up and out and watching everything unfold.
So in the end, this is going to be like a 20-hour day for you, right? And then you're going to sleep in on Wednesday?
Well, we'll see. Wednesday is day game, so we'll see. Ooh. I'll be fine, though. Okay. Nobody worry.
All right, so we just got done talking with Rachel and Tim, and we talked about the teams that did well, teams that didn't do well. Tell me, from your eyes, the team that you give rave reviews their deadline work.
I love the Astros getting Justin Verlander back. I think that is exactly what this team needed. Getting Max, not just a proven ace, but a guy they know, a guy who has basically been on their team for the last handful of years, minus a few months, as it'll end up being. I think with the way the rotation has gone this year, you know, entering the year, we were raving about their homegrown rotation, everything else. And with injuries and the way guys pitched, it was clear that maybe they weren't ready to let him go. So being able to go back and get him, I think, is huge. I also love what the Rangers did. I mean, it's amazing. We have these Texas ball clubs going out and getting the Cy Young winners. I really like them.
And the Angels being aggressive, too. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people disagree whether that was the right decision to trade or not trade Ohtani and to spend from minor league prospect resources. But the bottom line is that the American League West is going to be improved after all these deals. So when I talked to Tim before, you know, I asked him about sneaky good deadline moves. I think the Milwaukee Brewers would fall into that category. Like, they were not going to be the team to go out and make a deal for Verlander. They weren't going to be a team that was going to necessarily add a superstar player. But it feels like that they got better.
Yeah, I mean, I think they made incremental improvements and they got players who are better than what they had right now in whatever respect. So even if it isn't a Verlander or a Giolito and what have you, there's still ways to get better, even with one or two players. I think what they did was certainly very good. I like Mark Canna for that team. I think he will make a lot of sense there. I just think overall they did a really good job there for sure.
Maybe the Cubs, doing what they did, put pressure on the Brewers to make some moves. The Cincinnati Reds, we'll talk about it in a moment, not doing anything. But before we get to that, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 13. So one team that made some moves, maybe ones we might not have expected or we weren't sure how they would go, is the San Diego Padres. One of the players they got is Rich Hill, who is now going to be playing for his 13th different MLB team. That will tie Octavio Dotel for the second most in Major League history, behind only Edwin Jackson's 14. And I'm sitting here thinking about the 43-year-old Rich Hill and thinking, I really hope he's back next year to play for another team and tie Edwin Jackson.
Yeah, along those lines, you know, as you were talking, I thought, you know, Rich Hill probably has great trade deadline stories. He's probably got great stories all the time about just about anything. And I'm going to see him this weekend. We got the Padres, we got the Dodgers on Sunday Night Baseball. I think I'll try to tape an interview with him, Taylor.
Oh, that sounds delightful.
Number two.
Number two is 10. So we mentioned the Rangers before, and of course, they were very aggressive at the deadline. Thanks. 2 days ago, I was here tweeting in all captures, the Rangers, just seeing everything that they were doing. And I know we're going to talk about Max Scherzer and all of those moves, but I like the acquisition of Austin Hedges, and I love this for Bruce Bochy, obviously a former catcher manager, because Austin Hedges is a pure catcher defense acquisition. And I love seeing that from a team with a GM who's a pitcher in Chris Young and a manager who's a catcher in Bosch. So Austin Hedges, this 10 is for catcher framing runs. He has the most in all of baseball this year. Jonah Heim, who's of course on the injured list right now, has 7. He's tied for 3rd on that list. So I just like the approach of, okay, while he's out and in the backup roles, let's go for uber defense.
Number one.
Number one is one. So Michael Lorenzen, as far as I see, was the only All-Star this year who ended up being traded at the deadline. That one is the fewest number of All-Stars to change teams in a season since 2013. So it's a very interesting way to assess the impact of the new postseason format and everything else on the deadline. We saw some really good players move, so some of it is just kind of circumstance about the season they're having right now. Lucas Giolito is, of course, a all-star caliber pitcher who just wasn't one this year. Same with Scherzer and Berlin. But for Lorenzen to be the only one is certainly an interesting way to look at the deadline overall. And again, I mean, you remember, we're 2 years removed. I know it was a different postseason format, but in 2021, we had 10 All-Stars moved at the deadline, which was the most in any deadline ever, in any year ever. So it's a very interesting change since then.
All right, because you're such a nice person, I love to give you questions that make you cringe. Okay, so here's my question for you. I'm going to give you five fan bases that I'm assuming are probably not happy coming out of the deadline. Are you ready? The New York Mets fan base, the New York Yankees fan base, the Boston Red Sox fan base, after the Red Sox really didn't add that much, have very much of a different fan base than last year. The fan base of the Cincinnati Reds, who are playing so well, we thought that they might add a starting pitcher. They didn't do that. And then the fan base of the San Francisco Giants. So imagine the talk radio that we're going to see in those four markets tomorrow for five teams, the two New York teams. Which fan base is going to be the most unhappy? I want you to rank them 1 through 5. And we'll start with number 5 and work our way up to number 1, okay? Because it's all, you love numbers. And here's a set of numbers for you to do, okay? And let's for the record, your mom is a Giants fan, so she certainly has conveyed. So let's start out with number 5, the 5th most unhappiest fan base as reflected in talk radio on Wednesday.
All right, so again, as you alluded to, my mom, a Giants fan, my dad, and my best friend, Haywan, both Mets fans, so I'm already getting kind of a glimpse of how some of these might go. But I think if you're going talk radio, I mean, I'm a New Yorker, so I always think of New York talk radio as being sort of the start of it all with sports talk radio. So I'm going to save those two teams for, I guess, the top. I know Reds fans are going to be frustrated, and I understand that, but this is a great young team. I think while not making a move right now has an impact on how it looks maybe in October of this year, this team is in a great spot, and it doesn't preclude doing something in the offseason. And I also think that division is just so tumultuous with the, you know, three teams that are all kind of right around 500 or so, bit above, with the Brewers and the Cubs and, of course, the Reds, that I understand not going all in with a Justin Verlander or Max Scherzer or whoever you might have tried to get there. Who are my other teams here? The Red Sox. So I'll stick with them as well because, again, we're talking about division. It is so unfair the way the fan bases are going to react to the Red Sox and the Yankees when these teams are in the best division we have ever seen. This is going to be the first division in baseball history to have all five teams finish above 500. So I cannot imagine being in that front office and thinking, here we are, we'd be leading the AL Central instead of in last place or in fourth place. And I don't blame teams like that for not trying to make sort of those incremental upgrades. Because the truth is, we're praising what the Brewers did earlier. The Yankees or Red Sox made those kind of moves. They're still not competing with the Orioles, with the Blue Jays, and with the Rays, I don't think. I think they would have needed bigger moves. And you can't expect that at this point when every team is that good. So how many teams have I covered?
You covered 5, but you haven't ranked them. Number 5, it sounds like you're going to put the Reds fans at number 5.
I think so. Okay. Just because I really think, I'm kind of projecting. I think they should see themselves at number 5. I think number 1 is going to be the way the Yankees are talked about. I know I'm going the other order now. But because we know how the coverage around them always is, again, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with that sentiment. because I do think this is the toughest division we've seen. I'm going to put the Mets at number two there because it's New York. But I think they did very well. And everyone who I speak with who, you know, colleagues of mine who are smarter about numbers than I am and all of that, they all seem to think that the Mets did really well, especially in that Verlander trade. But I also know it's difficult to be a fan, and it's difficult to see the value of prospects when you had Hall of Famers a couple of days ago. So I'm going to put them two because it's New York. We know how New York can be. We'll put Boston three because Boston is probably second to New York, if not for maybe Philly in terms of how that talk radio goes. And that puts the Giants at four of us. My mother is not thrilled, but I told her to be patient. We will see. We'll see what happens. I want AJ Pollock to make his way across the entire NL West. He only needs the Padres at this point. So that's my ranking. But again, I don't think I can see a very good explanation for why each of these teams did what they did. Based on the situation that they're in.
All right, Sarah. Well, sorry to put you through that wrenching series of questions. Sorry, not sorry. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Lester.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a
Wait,
Tuesday.
How come you're wearing a Yankees cap?
Well, Buster, here's the thing. Lost.
Oh, you're paying off your bet.
Yeah, yeah. Lost the Stitch bet that Todd Radom threw out at us when we did the show on Sunday. Sarah forgot the hat, so I was going to like put it on in front of the Cal Ripken statue, which probably would have been more effective.
Oh,
but,
man.
But here we are.
I don't think you would have made it out alive at that point.
Yeah, it would have been. At least I wasn't wearing like an Orioles shirt. Although I did see some combo fans. I never understand that.
Really?
Yeah, that's a weird
thing. What combos
thing.
Did you see?
I saw like an Orioles hat and a Yankee shirt or vice versa.
Okay, that's weird.
It's weird. I don't like it.
Always fascinated by the couples, too, who have like a split.
Yeah, that you kind of get.
That makes sense.
You know, opposites attract, that whole thing. But for one person to wear like stuff from both teams,
right.
That one's kind of weird. You, as a lifelong Phillies fan, have you worn Mets gear with the Phillies gear?
No, but I have a lovely Yankees hat that I have worn with a Phillies sweatshirt.
You can live with that because they're not like arch rivals or anything.
Yeah.
And I have to say, and this is Sarah's grandfather's hat.
It is.
So
it is.
It's a little old. So physically, you know,
it's
not
retro.
In the best shape. I'm not thrilled about it being on my head for that reason, but then also, you know, all the other reasons attached to it. So
it's vintage, some may say.
Well, that's pretty cool.
This is painful,
he was a big Yankee fan.
I don't know if he was actually a big Yankee fan. Okay. I just think he had a Yankees hat.
Well, that's cool. But it is. I mean, I notice you're trying to like speed us through the Bleacher Tweets because you want to get the Yankee cap off, Taylor. Mm-hmm.
Especially, it's a joyous occasion because the Orioles acquired another starting pitcher. Can you sell me on Jack Flaherty here?
Yes. He definitely was pitching better down the stretch. He's definitely someone, given his experience pitching in the postseason, who you would feel comfortable giving the ball to in game one or game two. I think that them not doing anything at the deadline would have been unconscionable,
mm-hmm.
given how good they are. And so when I read Kyle Gibson's quote after the game last night, where he was kind of like, yeah, if we don't get somebody, we'll be okay. I was like, oh, no.
No.
No, they need somebody. You could feel that team was on fumes. And I know there are people in that clubhouse who absolutely were like, yeah, we could use some help here.
And I know a lot of fans trying to talk themselves into John Means and talking to people
you
in the talking to people in the organization this weekend. No one really sounded too high on that. You know, maybe he could be effective in October. That would be after like a September of, you know, trying to get his groove back. But who knows?
And that's a significant injury he's coming back from.
He's
right?
been gone for like 2 years, essentially.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There's no guarantee on that. I mean, that's the kind of the way that I feel about Kyle Wright in the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my son is like, well, we're going to get Wright back. We're going to get Max Fried back. I'm like, look, Kyle Wright, shoulder injury. You just never know how a comeback's going to go.
Mm-hmm. So please, the Orioles added to the team this trade deadline. I was sharpening my pitchfork on the way in here. Don't worry. I was driving and refreshing Twitter, which was extremely dangerous. But yeah, I was ready to be to come in here pissed, and I'm pleasantly surprised. So let's do some tweets here. Some people working through some things. We got Brian Stone King. He's writing in, how much did the Mets pay Verlander prior to the trade? Add $54 million to that. That's what they spent for 4 months of league average pitching. I don't care how much money they have. That's just bad business. It's so Mets.
That's an interesting point. So I'll add it up. It's $54 million that they're sending to the Astros to pay offset his salary going forward. So $82 million for basically 3 months because he spent the first month on the injured list. $82 million for 3 months. But in fairness to the Mets, they are getting these prospects back.
Uh-huh.
And they're getting, so you're basically buying prospects. That's what they did in these two deals. And as I said to Tim and Rachel, I think their choice, given where they were, was a reasonable path. I think the insane choice would have been like, you know what? Run it back. We were just unlucky this year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's put the same team out there in 2024 with those two guys a year older. I think that would have been crazy.
That's a good call on the prospect too, because I think they got the Astros' number one prospect, and
right.
I know that. Like with the Orioles, it was like basically everyone except for Jackson Holliday was available. So I mean, if that's what they're looking for, they got it. I also have to ask you about the Mets. Billy Epler the other day said, this is not a fire sale. Do you think Billy Epler knows what a fire sale means?
Yes, he does. He grew up in San Diego, huge Padres fan. He lived through the fire sale of 1993.
Uh-huh.
The fire sale with the Padres back then, and that was sort of that phrase was coined then, they traded Fred McGriff and Gary Sheffield and Bruce Hurst and Greg Harris. They traded basically all their best guys, Darren Jackson, except for Tony Gwynn and Andy Benes. That's it, right?
Tony Gwynn was happy about that.
Well, we'll save that for another day.
Okay.
But I can tell you this. I mean, the Mets coming out of this, I agree with you. I mean, it's aggressive to trade two guys who are, you know, first ballot, should be unanimous selections for the Hall of Fame. But next year's team, you do have still Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, Jeff McNeil, Starling Marte, Francisco Alvarez, all these young prospects. Yeah, Edwin Diaz coming mm-hmm. back at closer. So the idea that they're not going to be competitive next year, I'm not buying it. Would I pick them to win the division? Absolutely not. But I do think that Billy can say with a straight face, it's not a fire sale, because a fire sale is moving everybody.
I know you didn't listen to the open, but I mocked him in the open for that the other day. So I'm glad we could clear that up. Just that Taylor Schwenk, not Buster Olney doing that. Corey Rueckert writes in, the Reds do nothing at the deadline. Why am I not surprised?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, and I know that they felt that the asking prices were really high, but maybe it's like Sarah said, that the team, it's a good young team, and you hope that they continue that momentum going forward.
All right, let's get to the Yankees section.
You know, the
this.
Reds are a little bit like the Orioles were last year,
yes.
right?
Yes, oh yeah, exactly.
Right, where they arrived probably sooner than they expected, mm-hmm. and so they decided to hold back. Now, they did have at least one fringy move.
They did. We can dig it out here. But yeah. I just thought it was interesting, too, because the Braves, they made a bunch of moves. You know, Mark Canha, you know, some guys in the bullpen. So, I mean, that race is tight.
Yep.
As I said, Yankees portion of the Bleacher Tweets here. A lot of people working through a lot
gosh.
Of things. Slate writes in, with the outfield troubles and the injury to Judge, why haven't the Yankees given Jason Dominguez a call up yet? Also, are Bleacher Tweets now Bleacher X's? I don't think so.
So Jason Dominguez, from what I understand, has not dominated in the minor leagues so far. Like normally teams will not promote guys until they absolutely dominate. I can't remember exactly what level is. I want to say it's high A. So he's a ways away.
Okay. You got a lot of hype
and on top of that, right, and I don't think he's on the 40-man roster either, which is another complication. You know, I do think going forward that they probably, you know, like everyone, all Yankee fans want to see Florial in the outfield at some point. Just play the young guys.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just move forward with the young guys to some degree because, as I mentioned, it does feel like the front office is like, look, we've got a lot of players that we bought in here. Anthony Rizzo and DJ LeMahieu, we need them to play better. And if they don't, we're not going to make the playoffs anyway.
Andrew Campbell at Real Cam Drew. This is a long one here. Buster, it's not just that the Yankees are bad. It's all of the weird head-scratching moves happening all year. Sitting judge in a big game in Baltimore. The silliness with Domingo
Germán. Yeah, that makes no sense to me to this day. And nothing anybody will say to me, and I'm going to talk to more people about the rest of the week, will that ever make sense to me that they did that on Sunday?
As I got off the road from Baltimore and arrived in New York, the first thing my father-in-law said to me, he was asking me why Judge didn't play, and in his very thick New York accent, he said, "That's so stupid."
Yeah.
That was amusing. So we get the Domingo Germán silliness, running Josh Donaldson at third base instead of Peraza. It's almost like the Yankees care more about feelings and perceptions instead of actually trying to win every night. What has happened to this team?
Yeah, look, I'm not going to push back on the idea that a lot of silliness. I'm going to tell a Domingo Germán story that I found out today about, which will underscore that. So, as you know, Drew, before the start, his scheduled start on Monday, he was taken off that start, and we heard that he had some discomfort in near his right armpit. That's what we heard. And then as the game played out on Monday, suddenly he was warming up in the bullpen and he came in relief. It's an unusual series of events. Well, what happened, based on what I was told, was is that he had an infected hair follicle, okay? Essentially an ingrown hair. And you're like, wait, so they had examinations and all that stuff for an infected hair follicle? And I don't know if you watched the trade deadline show, but Eduardo Perez was with me, and he just started laughing out loud, in part because when we were in commercial break, he was like, wait a second, we were just in Baltimore the other day. We had Cal Ripken playing in every game, 2,632 straight games. And this is where Eduardo completely lost it in the commercial break. Can you imagine Cal sitting out with an infected hair follicle the way that the Yankees did with that start last night? Oh, my gosh.
Slap some cream on it. It'll be fine. Last one from the Yankees bunch. Gregory Gosnell writes in, do you think the Yankees would be a team that could benefit from a change in leadership? Think Phillies from last year.
Yeah, everyone always asks that. Here's the bottom line. Brian Cashman's in year one of a four-year deal. He's not going anywhere. With managers, as you guys know, a lot of times they're the ones who pay the price, you know, because you can't get rid of all the players. And I don't know what the Yankees would do with Aaron Boone if they don't make the playoffs. I know that Brian Cashman has a lot of respect for him. He thinks he's a terrific manager. I know that Hal really likes him, too. They, generally speaking, will follow their instincts. But they also have to listen to their fan base to some degree. Right?
I mean, do you think Brian Cashman's job is in jeopardy?
No, just mentioned. He's year one, you know, a four-year deal.
Sorry, I was looking ahead to the next.
That's okay. No problem. I've done that, too.
Professional over
here. Yeah, I had a game in Chicago once. It went 18 innings. I was so cold. And I did the post-game interview afterward, and it wasn't until after I finished that I realized I asked the same question twice. So I beat anything you just did right there.
Absolutely. Our guy Matt at Kayaking Smith writes, and the Angels are robbing us of a potential MVP versus MVP matchup in this series with Atlanta. Could Ohtani versus Acuna have been more exciting than Trout versus Ohtani in the WBC? Would have been fun. But
yeah, it would have been fun. It would not have been as exciting.
No.
Because Trout versus Ohtani was for the championship, and it was in the last inning.
All right, let's wrap it up with this. P.K. Steinberg accusing me of being more of a degenerate than I actually am. He said, Sunday night's podcast was great. How difficult was it to presumably not drink? P.K., how dare you infer that I would drink on the job like that? That's disgusting.
Wait. So when we went to dinner Saturday night and then I left to go theoretically do SportsCenter, didn't actually happen. When I left, from what I understand, the drinking went on after I left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But that wasn't on Sunday.
Was that at work?
No. That was a dinner amongst friends.
Okay.
That's what I think anyway. Okay. I mean, you left to go to work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I just didn't know how you were, you know, where it was going to land on the expenses and, you know, all of that.
Off the clock.
Yeah. No big deal. Off the clock before Sarah's bedtime alarm went off.
Yep.
And I have to say, Buster, you referenced your daughter missing a flight to Japan, you know, her having to figure it out. I missed my flight to Baltimore. I paid dearly for it yesterday because about a 4.5 hour drive from Baltimore to Central Long Island took 6 hours yesterday. And it was just absolutely brutal. So I've learned my lesson. That is for certain.
You will never miss another flight in your whole life.
Not like that anyway. I mean, other circumstances, but literally just like walking into the airport when the plane is leaving, I will not do that. No.
Very nice. All right.
One question for you.
Uh-huh.
How did that happen?
I don't know. I told you I had like a lobotomy overnight. I set my alarm for the wrong time. I did everything an hour late. So I just, you know, I'm a little bit numbers dyslexic. So maybe that played a part. I don't really know, but I have no excuses. I have no explanations.
You paid the price.
Paid that price. 10 plus hours in a car. Versus, you know, less than two on the plane.
It's been a bad 48 hours for you. You missed the plane. You pay that price. You're wearing a Yankees cap.
But
the Orioles got Jack Flaherty.
And I'm sitting here with you again twice in, a couple times over the last few days. So I'm going to miss you when you leave here. But you're going to go crash. You're going to go relax.
You won't miss me tomorrow or the next day because you guys are as tired as I am at this point. And I'm sure you're excited to get a couple days off before we reconvene on Friday.
Yep. We'll talk to everyone then. Send in those Bleacher tweets as you're watching games.
All right. My thanks today to Bruce Baldwin, who's here in the room with us off microphone. Nice. A Mets fan, keeping a smile going forward because he's believing in these prospects. And Taylor and Sarah and Sarah and Rachel and Tim. I think I covered everybody.
You got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rachel, a great addition to the podcast. I also have to mention that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's terrific. She's as good an editor as I've ever had. And when you're as old as me, you've had a lot of editors. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality is something we have to fight against every single day.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.